I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I am very happy to be here with you today. You know, our country recently celebrated Father's Day. And a few weeks before that, we celebrated Mother's Day. I think this is really, and I know other parts of the world also celebrate for days for moms and dads. But here in America, you know, when you look on social media, and I pay attention to social media, I see what's going on out there in the world, helps keep me in contact with people and opinions. You saw an outpouring of people, you know, saying how much they loved their father and how much their father meant to them. And I was caught up in that. You know, my father, as many of you know, I've told the story before, he passed when he was only 37, and I was a kid of 14 years old. We were on a hunting trip, and he had a very big heart attack, and he passed away right in front of me after I did CPR with my uncle for quite a while. It was a traumatic thing. And ever since I've been a kid, you know, at 14, you're just starting to become a young man at 14. You know, Father's Day was difficult for me. It was hard for me to put it into perspective. It was hard for me to understand, you know, the whole celebration thing since I didn't have my dad. When I became a father myself, that changed my perspective. And I think that's really one of the important things we need to bring to any of our holidays, but especially Mother's Day and Father's Day. You know, I knew a lot of people who wouldn't be upset that they didn't have a dad because their dads were not good men, they weren't good people, they weren't good providers. They were just people, and they ended up having kids, and they never took the responsibility to heart, and I always felt bad for them. But it was difficult for me to try and understand this whole father thing, like I said, until I had a child of my own. And then I didn't look at it as a day for me, you know, to celebrate me. I saw it as a day for me to celebrate the gift from God that I got to be a father. You know, that's really how it came to be for me. And then it gave me new perspective on looking back at my own dad, and kind of changed my point of view from me being sad for losing my dad. I felt bad for him, that he didn't get to see his kids grow up. He didn't get to enjoy the rest of his life with the woman he loved, my mom. You know, I felt bad for him in that perspective when I realized how much joy my children and my family have brought to me. So I think it's important for Father's Day and Mother's Day and Grandparents' Day. Really, everyone in our lives that we care about, our family and our friends, you can't take them for granted. You know, that's kind of what this holiday reminds me too. You can't take these people for granted. If there's somebody you're having a problem with, you know, last week we talked about the power of forgiveness. If you're having a problem with somebody, I'm just going to give you a little advice. Go solve the problem. Be the big man or the big woman. Swallow your pride. Go work it out. Life is not worth going through your days being upset or angry with people. You know, I know there's some people in my family that we're separated because of the Trump election, right? And here we are 2.5 years later and we don't speak anymore. And I know they listen to the radio show. You know, I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to call them and I'm going to try and work it out. You know, for two reasons. One, I missed them. I really cared about them. You know, they were important to me. And the other thing is, I didn't cause the problem. So I can be the big guy and try and reach out and say, hey, you know, let's get back together. Let's figure this out and go forward as family. So that's my thoughts on that. The last bit of commentary on Mother's Day, Father's Day, parents loving our family and friends, is that one of the things I remember seeing, you know, my mom had to take on the role of mom and dad. Now, she was mom. That's who she was. And I had to grow up real quick and take care of her and my brother. But I see many, many women out there who have that role of mom and dad thrust upon them, either because of a situation like in my family, or because the guy leaves, walks away, takes off, just doesn't care. And that woman is there with those kids, and she has to be a mom and a dad. And there's also other people that step in. You know, I had an uncle, my Uncle Wally, Big Wally, a great guy, really a good, decent man, good-hearted all the way through and through, not a bad bone in his body. And Wally stepped in to be a father figure, kind of for me and for my brother. You know, he came over, him and my Aunt Barbara came every weekend for dinner at the house. And, you know, Wally tried to go to my sports things and, you know, tried to mentor me like a father would, you know. And I never forgot that kindness that he gave me. So when I look around and I see other people out there that stand in the role of fathers and mothers, whether it's for their friends' children, children that they just met, or like my in-laws, Bea and Ted, who fostered so many babies going back 25 or 30 years ago. They were constantly fostering babies to give them a chance. You know, we have a sign hanging up in my home that my wife found after I had said this. I was thinking about Bea and Ted and all the love they've given us to my children, my wife and I. And I thought about it and I said, you know, it's all because those two people fell in love that my wife and I got to be together and to make our beautiful family, because my wife is adopted. So Bea and Ted, who fostered all of these kids, they also adopted my wife Kathleen and her brother Neil. And that's just what they were always been about. And that was, to me, awesome. I thought that was a great lesson to see in their very lives. And that's the kind of love they always give. So there's lots of people out there in our world that provide love and guidance and friendship. So while we celebrate specifically Mother's Day and Father's Day and Grandparents' Day and stuff like that, there's so many people in our lives that we should be grateful for. And you know, we get caught up in working, we get caught up in, we're just busy, we don't think about it. And I look around and I say, hey, take a minute to look at those people, tell them you care about them, tell them you love them, you know? And I include all of you in that, because I wouldn't get to be here if you weren't listening. I wouldn't get to say what I say and read your emails and look at your tweets and feel I'm connected to the bigger country out there. So thank you all very much. And remember, love is the most important thing that there is. So think about those people you love and tell them before it's too late. Okay, so what's on the calendar here on Chasing Justice? We have, I'm looking at, you know, every week I compile a list of things I want to talk about. And that list gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But let's just see a couple of the things our president has done recently. So I like the story about the tariffs on Mexico, or the threat of the tariffs on Mexico. You know, these blithering idiots in our Congress on both sides of the aisle who don't understand that a guy like Trump has to use leverage to get people to move. So what he came into office saying was that previous administrations, right and left, Republican and Democrat, get played in all of these deals they make, whether they're financial deals, trade deals, whatever. They get played. And because they feel guilty or they feel stupid or they don't know any better, the country gets played and we end up in bad deals. Well, Trump's a businessman. Now, no, he doesn't win every single deal. But you know what? He's a billionaire and we're not. So he must have done something correct to have the Trump empire. I don't know. You got 100 hotels around the world, luxury hotels with your name on them? I don't. So I like these people saying, oh, he's really not that good a businessman. You know what? You don't have your name on hotels. He does. So you have to look to a guy who's a winner like this. This is what he does. He makes deals. So when he goes to Mexico and he says, hey, guess what? I love tariffs. And they all jump up and down, all the people in our Congress. Oh, you can't do that. You'll ruin this. The avocados. Granted, avocado farmers are important. All of our farmers are important. People who produce produce around the world are very important to all of us. But I got to tell you right now, if we have to have avocado prices go through the roof for a little while so that we can fix some of our problems with Mexico, then that's what you have to do. It's called the price of doing business. Trump recognizes that. So he threatens, hey, we're going to throw tariffs on a bunch of stuff, including your avocados. Your government, your country is going to suffer from that. So therefore, maybe you should do the right thing. And our politicians, of course, lose their minds because they don't know how to make a deal. They don't know how to do leverage. They just know how to give in. You know, that kind of thing. And what happens? In 2 days or 3 days, they come back. The Mexican government comes back. We're going to make a deal. Here's the deal. We're going to do all these kind of different things to help at the border now. This is how you have to make a deal. You have to raise the stakes. You know, when I teach police officers, one of the things I teach them in interview interrogation. Now, that seems like, where's that connection? But here's the connection. The only reason interview interrogation works is that people will only make a decision to tell you things if they feel there's jeopardy. If they feel there's no jeopardy, they're not going to tell you anything. The deal is, how do they deal with that jeopardy? See, and this is the same thing with the Mexican government or the Australian government or the Peruvian government or whoever we're making a deal with. If there's no jeopardy for them, then there's no reason, no incentive for them to make a better deal. So when Trump goes to these people and he says, hey, we're going to put tariffs on your stuff. We're going to tariff all them cars that are down there that you're sending here. Then they realize there's jeopardy for them. They had better step in and engage and do something. This is how you get a deal done. And I got to tell you, it's frustrating. It's frustrating as hell to look at all these politicians on our side, even the Republicans, who jump up and down and say, oh, he's doing the wrong thing. We're going to vote against his tariffs. We're gonna overturn them in Congress. We're not going to let... Who are you protecting? Who are you imbeciles protecting? You are protecting the people we're trying to put in a little bit of jeopardy so they make a better deal for our country. Wake up, you dopes. This is what the guy is trying to do. Whether you like him or not, he's trying to do the right thing for us. All right, so I wanted to talk about that for a couple of minutes. All right, the last thing that I want to talk about in this particular segment is, you know, in the background here, you might hear my dog barking. Now, sometimes I get really annoyed when he barks and I'm trying to do the radio program here for you because nobody wants to hear a barking dog. Other times I know he's just really excited because maybe we have a friend coming over for him. And we do. We bring rescue dogs in and we talked about that. It's really a loving, wonderful thing to do. We've helped lots and lots of dogs find their forever home. And our boy, Arthur, is actually a rescue that we decided we would keep because he fit into our family so well. But we've had some sadness here today. And I need to just put it out there because our good friend Jim from the neighborhood lost his really good boy, Riley, today. Riley, the black lab, who is really one of the sweetest, most loving little puppies of all. Riley is about 7 years old, I think, maybe six, seven to eight in that range. He stayed here at my house many times. He stayed with Arthur. He stayed with my beloved Shadow that we had to put down a couple years ago. But poor Riley was diagnosed last week with a really bad kind of a cancer. And they thought it was going to be an operation and, you know, they would remove the cancer and Riley would live out the rest of his life and it would be okay. Well, he had the surgery and it didn't go very well. They found the cancer was more progressive and more aggressive than they thought it was. And they sent him home. Well, unfortunately, they thought they had a good 6 months with beautiful Riley. And as it turns out, he got really, really overwhelmed by the disease in only a couple of days. And unfortunately, Riley left us this past weekend. And I know Jim and his family are very upset. It's very, very sad. We're upset about it here too. So, you know, think about all the dogs out there that you love. I guess that's really the theme of this first segment, isn't it? Loving everything in your life. And we love little Riley and we're very sorry that he's gone. But, you know, do you think dogs go to heaven? Do you think dogs go to heaven? I don't know. I think they do. I don't know if this is controversial, but, you know, I've had a lot of dogs that I love. And, you know, we've had to put them down when they get old and sick. And it's the loving, compassionate thing to do for them. But I always said that a loving God would have a place for these loving dogs. Now, we have a cat, too. And I like my cat, but my cat is not affectionate like my dog Arthur is, and certainly not like my Shadow and my Riley were, which is interesting. So when you see that intelligence spark in a dog's eyes, which you can see, and then you see that love, and you see that, you know, even laughter in a dog. You know, when a dog's having fun and they're playing with you and they're running around and maybe you're wrestling or you're throwing a ball or chasing a stick, you can see that they're having fun, that they're being a wise guy. You know, then you can see that they come up and cuddle you and they sit next to you and, you know, they nuzzle on you. That's love. You know, so you have these emotions, this range of emotions in these dogs that is, I don't want to say very human-like, but very, very real. You know, a dog can be silly. A dog can be angry. A dog can be sad. You know, how many times do you hear the dog crying when they want to get out of the room or they want to come and see you or how excited they are when you come home, right? And how loving they can be. So I think there is a place in heaven for these dogs. At least I hope so. You know, how nice would it be there to get to heaven and see all your family and friends who have gone before you, to see God, which is the most awesome thing of all, but then to have all your dogs come running out at you. See, so I was talking to somebody about this, and they said, well, if you think dogs are there, why wouldn't cats be there? I mean, some cats are very affectionate. People love their cats. I say, I don't know. Cat just doesn't seem the same. You do see cats play. You do see cats, you know, engaging fun, but what if you had a pet frog? I mean, I've never cuddled a pet frog, and some people love their turtles. Who was it? A guy tried to get on an airplane with a comfort alligator? So I don't know how affectionate an alligator can be. So it just struck me in the midst of all of this. I want to tell you about Riley and let you know. Because this segment really is all about love. The people that we love, the animals that we love. It all comes down to love, doesn't it? Isn't that the most important thing for all of us? I think it really is. And when we come back, not only are we going to talk about some religious freedom in the court that's going on, because that's interesting. We're talking about Mr. Schiff and all the other political things that are going on out there. So, thank you very much for listening, and you know, remember, love everybody that you can. We'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com. Where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm going to ask you to go to thewoundedblue.org. That's www.thewoundedblue.org. That is the website for the organization that is the National Association for Injured and Disabled Police Officers. It is a support organization for these men and women who have given so much in the line of duty. We desperately need your help to raise money to get this movement going. And if you are a GoFundMe-er, go to GoFundMe, look up The Wounded Blue, and you can give there as well. But check it out, please, and also check out our film, The Wounded Blue, on Amazon.com.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice here on Round 2. Ding, 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 ding. It's Round 2 on the America Out Loud Radio Network. And I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. All right, so what else has been going on in the world? Now, do you see with the upcoming elections, there's a lot of talk about the president and his poll numbers. Oh, my gosh. Every Democrat in the world is beating him. Is this real? Are these polls real? Have you changed your mind? Are you now going to vote for a Democrat? Are we going to go backwards in the next election and undo the tax cuts that had the economy roaring now, the best it's ever been, which is really amazing? Is that what you're going to do? Are you going to vote to go turn things around because you personally don't like Mr. Trump? So instead, Joe Biden is the answer, or Kamala Harris is the answer? Or maybe Mayor Pete is the answer. Really? Is that what we're going to do as a country? I can't imagine it's what we're going to do. It would seem foolish to do such a thing. It would seem unrealistic. But I was listening to a commentator the other day, and he was saying at this point in the re-election of Ronald Reagan, he was actually in 1984, when he was going for re-election against Mondale, he was actually down to Mondale by quite a lot. And as it turns out, we all know Mondale got trounced 49 states to one. And it was interesting. I was listening to the campaign manager for Reagan. I can't think of his name right now. Went right out of my head. But he was on there, and he said, he goes, yeah, we could have won Minnesota also. But Ronald Reagan said that he thought Walter Mondale was really a decent man, and he deserved to at least win his home state in the election. So they decided not to campaign there, not to push too hard, and just let the guy win his home state. Now, that's a pretty decent thing to do. You got a guy who is you won 49 states and you could have won 50, but instead you let a guy, you know, do his thing. So is that what we're going to do as a nation? Are we going to go backwards in time, and now we're going to elect one of these Democrats? You have a choice. You have Joe Biden, who now is flip-flopping on everything he believes because he has a lot of pressure from the new socialist wing of the Democrat Party, the AOC crowd, that he has to flip-flop. He's against the Hyde Amendment now that he was in favor of for the majority of his career, that it's been enacted. But he flip-flopped on that because now he has to gain favor with these new people. Is that really what you want? A guy that's willing to change with the wind? Because, you know, it seems to me that it's not so much that, as he said, other governments are calling him and telling him that he needs to run for the White House. Which, by the way, would he be taking information from foreign governments if they made calls to him and said, you need to run for the president? Would that be taking information from foreign governments? Like they're losing their minds about President Trump saying he might listen to somebody who had information? So anyway, Joe Biden, does he really offer new and exciting ways to propel the country forward? Does anybody think that Joe Biden at the helm of the United States is going to allow the economy to continue to grow, the military to remain strong, for us to change all these crazy trade deals we have with these nations that are trying to take advantage of us? Is that really what's going to happen? No, I think we can pretty easily predict that we would go back to the era type of Obama, and he would feel a lot of pressure from his party to do all kinds of these left-wing nutcase things that they're talking about. Now, that's the other side of the equation. If he's to win, if Joe Biden were to win against President Trump, would there be big coattails? Would he bring in a Democrat Congress in both houses, you know, House of Representatives and the Senate? Would he bring in all those people and have a complete run at the government? Could you imagine how good that would be for all of us, what they would be doing? So the fact that there's people in our country that look at the same things that I'm discussing right here, and they say to themselves, well, yeah, because this Trump guy, boy, I just don't like him, and I would rather go the other way and, you know, take our chances with that, because how bad could it be? How bad could it be? It could be really, really, really bad if we go the other way. So that's not going to happen. This whole idea of Trump saying he would take information and he may or may not tell the FBI about it. You see our friends on the left losing their minds over this, that this is the thing he just said. Now we can impeach him because he said he would do that. Interesting. Well, like I said, Joe Biden said these other countries' leaders are calling him and telling him he should run. So isn't he taking information and making decisions based on what these other foreign leaders said, first of all? Number two, how about our friend, that wacky dude, Adam Schiff, right? How wacky is this guy? There's recordings out there of him talking to a prankster that he thought was from Russia, offering him information on Trump. And the whole tape is right there of him saying, oh, what did he do? And the guy says, oh, naked Trump. We have naked Trump doing things. Oh, really? Oh, that's very, we want that information. We absolutely do. My people will call you and get it. Isn't that guy taking information from a foreign source? How come there's no investigation about that? Why don't we see him lined up in front of the Congress saying, Mr. Schiff, did you actually take this phone call we've all heard? What were you doing? because it's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen. We're being played, right? This is a big game of not. Are our fellow citizens out there in the country, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, and all these other places, are they really seriously going to dump Trump at the next election? Is that really what's going to happen? I can't imagine that, you know, Pennsylvania. Well, Pennsylvania is ruled by a couple of the big cities, like most of the places are. It's the big cities that cause the problems. And you have a lot of Democratic voters in those big cities, and they sway the states. But I don't think Pennsylvania is going to go over. Michigan? I can't imagine Michigan going over. But I suppose it's possible. I'd be interesting to see. I really don't believe it right now. I think the economy is going well enough that I think nobody's going to beat them. All right, so I'm moving through my list here. You know, and I'm kind of bouncing around a little bit, but I'm talking about these crazy things going on here. Did you hear about the 11-year-old? An 11-year-old was the victim of a home invasion right here in America. And apparently these three teenagers busted into his house. They found a pellet gun, I guess, in his house. That's how the story goes. And they pointed it at the kid, and they told him to get in the closet, and they took his phone. Well, the kid said he knew that it was a pellet gun and that it wasn't loaded, so he just got in the closet. And when the bad guys, the two or three burglars, left the room, this kid came out of the room and decided to defend himself and defend his home. He took and this might sound strange, but he took a machete off the wall that he had up on the wall, I guess as a decoration or something. God knows what he had it for, but the kid had a machete. And he said he went out into the house, and there was one of the burglars, I guess taking apart his electronics or taking apart their TV or doing something. And this kid runs up to him and smacks him in the head with the machete. Right? Well, the kid who got hit in the head with the machete, the burglar, apparently turns around, can't believe he got hit in the head, but then he was bleeding rather profusely. And he dropped the electronics and he ran out of the house. So I hear this little kid, and he's 11, so he's a little kid, and he's on the radio and he's saying, well, you know, I didn't know what else to do, but I figured I would just, I wasn't thinking clear, I just took a weapon and I defended myself. Now, isn't that amazing? You know, how many times does that happen? You know, we hear about you know, gun deaths in the country, and I think the number is around 30,000 gun deaths a year. And you say, that's a horrible number. That's a lot of gun deaths. But when you look at the statistics, a lot of those gun deaths are criminals attacking each other. There's a percentage of them that are suicides. And then there's legitimate number ones that where they're used in a robbery against an innocent civilian, and the civilian is killed or murdered. It's all terrible, no doubt about it. Every one of those deaths is a terrible loss. But do you know how many times weapons are used to defend people and to save people from things? I think the number is something like 400,000 times a year, people with the possessing of their weapon protect themselves. Now, that doesn't mean they're killing 400,000 bad guys that are attacking them. Just maybe they use the weapon, they brandish the weapon, they fire a shot, maybe they injure the person, but they stop the attack on themselves. We never hear that from our friends in the media, because that would really go against their point of view, I guess. So that's kind of crazy. All right, so that was something I thought was interesting. Another thing that's popping up, you know, I fly around a lot now. My company, True Security Design, we are a nationwide company. We go all over the place trying to help people with their safety and security needs, with training for companies and corporations on surviving active shooters, all that kind of stuff. You heard my commercial before, okay? So you know what I'm doing out there. But I fly around a lot, and first of all, I'm fascinated with flight. I love everything about flight. I wish I could have been a jet pilot. I thought that would have been really cool. But any kind of flight, I think, is great. And I love even commercial airliners. I love sitting in the airplane and, you know, you're on the runway and the tarmac ready to go, and all of a sudden you hear the engines gear up when a plane starts to rumble. And next thing you know, you're doing 140 miles an hour, 150 miles an hour down the runway. And that big, heavy bird just, boom, lets go, and there's silence, and up you go. And the power of the engines. I just love flight. Well, the Malaysian Airways flight MH-70 that's been missing now since March 8th, 2014. All right, so that's 5 years this plane has been missing. And all they've ever found is pieces of the wreckage. So there was an article recently I was reading about that. And they're talking about, you know, they're focusing, apparently the Malaysian government or the law enforcement arm of their government knew a little bit more about the pilot than they said. They said this guy was sad and lonely. Apparently his wife had left him. This is what I read in the article. And that he was very sad and lonely. Apparently he had romantic trysts with some of the stewardesses, which, you know, when this conversation was happening recently with a group of people, everybody always kind of figured it. Does that go on? You know, you see all these people, they go city to city and they stay there in hotels. And, you know, when I fly around now, I'll see like a group of 7 or 8 male and female flight attendants and the captains, they're all staying in the same hotel. And then they all get in a car and then they head back and then they get on their flight and then they fly their flight where they're going. You wonder if there's any of that intermingling, so to speak, going on there. But anyway, according to some sources, this pilot had had some affairs with some of the flight attendants. And he was sad and lonely. The co-pilot, they can't find a lot wrong with him. But since they never found much of the plane, what they have to do is concentrate on the people who were in control. And they know that the flight recorder data, the boxes haven't been found, but they know the radar was turned off. At some point, somebody manually turned that off. The plane accelerated and climbed up to some 40,000 feet. Now, most commercial traffic, especially on international flights, when you're up there, is between, I guess, 33 and 37, maybe 38,000 feet. You get up to 40, you know, that's, you're really up there. You got to be avoiding a storm or something. And I'm not a pilot, but this is what my understanding is. But this plane turned off its transponder so nobody could follow it. Radar was watching it. It made a heavy turn off course of where it should have been going. And then it accelerated and was climbing to the 40,000 foot mark. And then we kind of lost track of the plane. Nobody knows where it went. We've only found pieces of debris that have washed up on some beaches. And there's no way to tell what really happened. So they're saying that this plane probably reached certain heights where and speeds that it ran out of fuel. Fuel exhaustion, they call it. And then it came spiraling down and probably came apart like confetti, as they're describing it, when it hit the ocean. The only part about that is that the only ones who probably would have been awake would have been the pilots, because once they hit 40,000 feet, they said the decompression probably would have rendered all the passengers unconscious and then killed them, probably kind of quickly. Even if the air masks came down, they said that would only last for a few minutes, and then people would just go, slowly go. They said no choking, no hacking, no pain, just go off to sleep and they would die. But the pilots would have a pressurized set of air that could last for hours, so the pilot was probably awake. God only knows what happened to the co-pilot. You know, he could have been rendered unconscious in some other way, and this pilot did whatever he did. But it's not the first time. We know there was a pilot in the last couple years that committed suicide by flying the plane right into a mountain, right? Killing himself and everybody on board. And then there was an Egyptian airliner, Egyptian pilot, who flew the plane directly into the ocean to kill himself and kill everybody on the plane. So these kind of things happen, you know. And like I said, I fly around a lot now. And I think about all these things when I get on a plane. You know, I do love flight, but I do have to say to myself, I hope everything is working well here. What's interesting is that, you know, we can't find any more wreckage from that plane. They searched very heavily and never found the answer to what actually happened. And I wonder if we ever will, you know, someday. I saw an interesting show the other night along these lines. They were looking in the Bermuda Triangle for some shipwrecks. Now, there has been some gigantic ships that have disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle. And I'm not one to believe that it's some, a haunted space or something, that weird things are happening. Although, there have been documented cases of, you know, the compasses going bad and all that. But the thing is, you know, you would think that there would be somebody out there, like every ship that crosses should have a sideband sonar on it, mapping the bottom as it goes, because there are some, you know, very big ships that went down that have never been found before. Like the Marine Sulphur Queen. This was a gigantic ship that went down without a trace, with nothing. How many airplanes, you know, Flight 57? The five pilots back in the 1940s that flew back and forth across the triangle trying to find their way back to Florida. And we never know what happened to them. Well, everybody assumes they ran out of fuel and they ditched, but they flew one way, then they flew another. They were talking to the tower. They couldn't get a visual on where they were. They said their equipment wasn't working. They didn't have compasses that were working. I mean, that was all very, very strange, but these five planes and pilots went down, and they are some of several, I guess, hundred boats and planes and everything that have disappeared without a trace. They have to be littering the bottom of that triangle. That's what I would suggest. Side scan sonar, whatever they call it, on every boat that crosses back and forth, and map that whole bottom. Let's find where these things are. I think it could be interesting. All right, and the last thing along those lines is that there was a story that President Trump was briefed on UFOs, unidentified flying objects. So for years, you know, there's been speculation and story and Project Blue Book and, you know, the truth is out there and all of this stuff. I find that very interesting that the president was briefed on this, and when asked about it, he said, I don't really know what it is, and he let alone. If you were the president, wouldn't that be one of the first things you'd want to know? Now, granted, aside from world peace and threats and all that other stuff, wouldn't you call those people in and go, all right, Area 51, I want to know. Jim Giordano wants to know. Are there little green men out there? Are there aliens? Do you have spaceships? I'd want to know that stuff. All right? So, thanks for listening here. This is round two. And round two, boy, we bounced all over the place together, didn't we, today? It's kind of one of those kind of days. I feel like I'm all over the place, and I'm just kind of spending time here with you. So we'll be back in a couple minutes with round three here on Chasing Justice.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
All right, everybody, here we go. We're back on Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. You know, I want you to go up and down the dial on as it is on the thing. Go to www.americaoutloud.com. I want you to go there, and I want you to look at all the different hosts that are on this network. Right? You can click on their names. You can read articles that they've written. You can listen to podcasts. Remember, pick us up on the podcast if you miss us when we come out at 3 o'clock every weekday. If you miss us, you can find us on the podcast. All the previous shows are there, all the episodes, all the fun stuff, the serious stuff. Everything about Chasing Justice is out there. But so are all the other shows. So, you know, this is a tremendous network for people that like talk radio because there's something for everybody. And in a lot of cases, there's a lot of things for everybody that are out there. So, you know, Lieutenant Randy, excellent show. Ava, go listen to Ava. Listen to Malcolm Out Loud. Malcolm Out Loud has tremendous shows on here. Plus, Dr. Ron. And, man, it's just this past weekend, I was listening and just bouncing around, listening to all the different podcasts. It's really excellent stuff. So I'm glad we're all here together. I'm glad you're listening to Chasing Justice. You can reach out to us and contact us here at Chasing Justice, or me, you know, me or us. We have a team here. But you can reach out to me on Twitter at Pangaro Global. At Pangaro Global. So if you're listening, take a few minutes, go on there and follow me. I'll follow you back and we can comment on the world of Chasing Justice. You can also find us on the email. People send me emails, which is really interesting. It's Joseph Pangaro or J. Pangaro, the letter J. Pangaro at AmericaOutloud.com. I get your emails. I do respond because I love to talk to people that are out there listening. All right. So what I'm going to tell you about True Security Design, my company. Now, I say we're nationwide, and we are. We started out locally in the New Jersey area. Then we incorporated New York. Then we incorporated Connecticut. We've been out to Colorado, Virginia, Florida, Wisconsin, which is awesome. And now we've made a decision that we're going to offer our services anywhere and everywhere in the United States of America. So if you have a company and you are concerned about training your employees on de-escalation techniques, okay, if somebody starts to get upset in your company, at your company, a customer, a visitor, a stranger off the street, one of your employees, how do you calm that person down so that they don't get violent? Those are de-escalation techniques. I can come out and teach you all of that. How to survive an active shooter. We just saw what happened in Virginia Beach. It happens. People show up at places of business, either ex-employees, former employees, current employees, or strangers, and they throw violence on the people that are there. So, you know, how would your company, how would your employees survive? Your schools. Do your kids go to school? Have they had a threat assessment? I come out and I'll do a threat assessment and help them find their security gaps. That's True Security Design. You find me at www.truesecuritydesign.com. All right? So there's our commercial we talked about before. So in our investigation that's going on in Washington, the president said something very interesting the other day. He was on with George Stephanopoulos. Now, I wouldn't trust George Stephanopoulos as far as I could throw him. He is a Clinton guy. He always has been a Clinton guy, which is why he got the job on the ABC radio or ABC TV. He is a partisan individual. He tries to pretend he's a journalist. We all know he's not a journalist. He's a partisan with a TV show, as most of them are. And he actually caused trouble for Romney when Romney was running for president. And they asked Romney about contraception out of nowhere. And like a dope, he wasn't prepared for the question. And he answered it, and they turned it into the war on women. Next thing you know, they were running with that whole thing. Well, I don't know why President Trump felt the need to sit down with this guy. Like, I get he's not afraid, that he's fearless of the media. He's not afraid of them in any way, shape, or form. He will go back at them. But why would you put yourself in a position where, when you have, and I'm not gonna say he might be a snake and he might be a partisan, but he's a talented snake and a talented partisan, this Stephanopoulos. And what he has behind him is that if he can get you to say even just the slightest little thing that they can turn and twist to follow their agenda, they will, and they'll make you look bad. So we see that's what happened here when he went on with Stephanopoulos, the president, when President Trump went on with Stephanopoulos, and they asked him, you know, if you had a foreign government reaching out to you with information, would you listen to the information? And basically the president said, you know, what I think most of us would say, well, if somebody would call me up to tell me something about my opponent, I would probably listen. Would you tell the FBI? And he goes, I don't know. I'd have to find out what it was they were going to tell me. And of course, now they're all using this for impeachment. Oh, we have to impeach him now. He's saying he would violate the law. It would be unnatural if somebody called you and said, hey, listen, I know something about your opponent. But wait a minute. I cannot speak to you. I do not want to know what you know. And call the FBI. Now, that might be the law. And that might be what we hope everyone would do. But at the same time, don't you think people would say, well, what is it you got? What are you talking about? And they start to tell you, well, he's involved with all this money laundering and he's doing A, B, C, and D. Oh, really? And how do you know that? You'd get the information, then you'd say, boy, that's criminal. You go to the FBI and say, listen, I just heard that this is going on. I don't know. I'm not in that position and I don't know the law as well as I probably should to comment on it. But I found it interesting. My point is about President Trump talking to Stephanopoulos, and now they've turned this into a whole big mess. But I did find what the president said interesting. Stephanopoulos asked him, do you think with this whole Spygate thing that's going on, do you think the Obama administration knew anything about it? And our president says, well, I don't know, which was a good answer because he can't reveal if he does or not at this point. Stephanopoulos asks him, do you think Obama knew about this Spygate stuff? And President Trump says, smartly, he says, I don't know for sure, but I think he must have had to know. I mean, it went pretty high up. No kidding. We've been saying that for the longest time. This went pretty high up. I think the investigation is going to reveal a lot of things. But again, week after week after week, we're talking about this, and there's nothing coming that quick. You know, we're all hoping that it would come a little bit quicker. You know, throw some indictments in there. Let's indict some of these people that did this. Let's see some of the leakers. We've been working on leak investigations for quite a while. I think even Jeff Sessions was working on some leak investigations. We saw one young lady indicted many months ago, but since then, nobody. I mean, let's go with the obvious stuff we have. James Comey, who actually leaked to the reporter the notes about the president when he had that meeting. Let's indict him. Maybe there's more charges down the road, but let's get him indicted, right? Wouldn't that be the way to start the ball rolling and change the entire conversation? So I think that's something to know. Did Obama know? I think it's pretty obvious that President Obama and his upper staff, including Joe Biden, had to know what was going on here. All right. So along that line, let's talk about U.S. Navy SEAL. Eddie Gallagher. These guys that do this are American heroes. You know, this training, the process to get picked to be a Navy SEAL is arduous. And then the training they go through, and then they go off and they do these missions, these very dangerous classified missions, highly technical. You know, they ship these guys into places, they have to sneak. You know, we've seen it on, you know, they're in the rubber boat, they snorkel out of a submarine, they go and do what they got to do and come back. This Eddie Gallagher has been accused of killing an ISIS prisoner that he was in charge of, as well as a year or so before sniping a couple civilians when he was on duty in the war over there fighting for us. And these charges come back to him. And his trial is starting, and they're looking to, you know, put this guy away forever. But it came out, there was some prosecutorial misconduct. And I'm friendly with prosecutors, and I know they want to do the right thing, but I think like anybody that acts in any type of a capacity in the court system, we have to be careful that we don't just go for getting things done and breaking the rule of law. Now, the FBI and everybody, they could certainly say that they had this information that Trump and his campaign were colluding with Russians. That's the information they had, so they did whatever they had to do to uncover that. Because if he really was doing that, and he was a puppet of Russia, that would be very bad. Now, we've all said that, right? If he really did bad things, we need to know about it. But the fact is that they broke laws. They broke protocols. They broke policies. They did all these things wrong in pursuit of, even if we gave them the benefit of the doubt, in pursuit of an investigation of somebody doing something wrong, you know, a dark horse candidate that was sent there by Russia to take over America. You know, we would want something to be done about that if it was true. But at the same time, we all know it was really just a conspiracy amongst people on the left to overturn the election. I'm not going into that again. My point being is that this Eddie Gallagher is over there doing what we've sent him to do. And I don't know all the facts of the case. All I do know is this. When you send men and women into a war zone where there is killing, where there is danger every minute, where they can be blown up by a roadside bomb, where there are snipers to get them, where there are women and children strapped with explosives to blow them up, and these men and women are over there trying to do the right thing, doing what we've sent them to do. Sometimes war is an ugly, ugly thing. Now, I'm going to qualify what I'm saying here. I'm not saying you're in a war zone and therefore you rape somebody and, oh, well, that's part of being in war. That's not right. That is never right. Okay? That would never be correct to do. But you're over there and you're fighting with people that are trying to kill you, blow you up, shoot you, stab you. We don't know exactly what happened with this guy. All we know is that we sent him there and these things happened. So, What do we do with our men and women who find themselves in these positions where they're there? And maybe they go too far. Maybe they had to do whatever to subdue this person and they went a little too far and the person got killed. Maybe they used the force to kill him because that's what seemed like the right thing to do at the moment. In the fog of war, do we want to then turn around and take our soldiers who are over there and prosecute them and put them in prison forever? This is a very difficult thing to talk about, and I'm trying to wrap myself around it myself. What is it exactly that I feel about this? But I know that there's been instances in the past when we've had soldiers who have been charged with, you know, committing murder of the enemy. Well, if it's in a firefight and they kill them, they get a medal. If it's not during a firefight, if it's in the heat of some other type of a conflict with the enemy and they kill them, that's murder. And I don't pretend to be as ignorant as my ramblings might sound at the moment, because my point is really to flesh the idea out. I'm trying to flesh this out so I understand it and see what's going on here. It seems to me we have to give our military men and women that are over there more than the benefit of the doubt. We can investigate, but I don't think we immediately go to, you're a murderer, you're under arrest, you're going to sit in prison and rot, and you're going to have a trial. I think we need to first say, we don't understand the circumstances that this prisoner ended up dead. We're going to investigate that. With the greatest benefit of the doubt to you. And if there was any benefit of a doubt, it should be given to our military men and women. So I don't know exactly what happened there, but I think President Trump is considering pardoning him, which I think I would be in favor of, just from what I know of the case right now, because we put these people in very, very difficult positions, and then we expect them to do miracles, to live like saints when they're in the middle of fighting for their lives. And sometimes it gets overwhelming. That's all I guess I'm going to say about it. Support your men and women who are in uniform that are fighting for our country, and give them the benefit of the doubt. All right, so we're moving through my list here pretty good today. I have to say, I'm actually surprised. You know, another thing that came out recently is we are energy independent, or at least it seems that we're energy independent. You know, the Iranians put a couple of bombs on some oil tankers, and we saw the movement of the oil prices, barely a blip, because we put out so much energy now. Isn't that a good thing? Wouldn't it be great? We heard a story about America's now energy independent. I'd like to see the gas prices come down. You know, now that we have all this oil, let's get it out there. That's probably too much to hope for. But at $3 a gallon, $2.50 a gallon, we can become very profitable as a country. When gas starts getting up to $4 a gallon, $5 a gallon, that's when it hurts everybody, especially our middle class and our people who are at the bottom economically. You know, $5 a gallon is painful. If we stay at $2.50 because we're putting out all this energy, natural gas is at all-time lows to heat our homes and use that kind of fuel, this is a fantastic thing. And this is because President Trump has taken initiatives to make us energy independent. This is a fantastic thing. We should all applaud that, because that removes our need for the oil from these countries of many places that hate us and want to do bad things to us. We don't need their oil. Let them go sell their oil someplace else, right? We produce our own. So I think that is really a great thing for all of us. All right. In closing, and I only have a couple of minutes left, I wanted to say today that as we go forward, I'm going to try and bring in some interesting stuff. Bill Dallas from the neighborhood, Bill recently had an opportunity to go with his pastor to a prison, and he actually sat and he spoke with Son of Sam killer, the .44 caliber killer, David Berkovitz. And Bill and I are going to sit down and we're going to talk about this at length and in depth, because Bill is a really intelligent guy. He's got a wonderful heart. He has the faith in God. And I had a lot of questions for Bill. You know, what was it like to sit down with this very notorious American serial killer, to actually sit down and talk with him? You know, apparently David Berkowitz now says that he is a, you know, born-again Christian. He's found God. His killing was due to evil that was in his life. And he's, you know, he's never getting out of prison. He's never getting out of there. He knows that. And he wants to tell people what happened to him. And Bill went there with his pastor and sat down with him for 3.5 hours and talked with him. And I asked Bill, did you believe him? And I'll let you hear what Bill has to say about his interaction with David Berkowitz, but I found it very, very interesting, and I'm going to get Bill on here one-on-one very soon, and we're going to talk about this. And as a matter of fact, we may be corresponding a little bit with Mr. Berkowitz to get an understanding of his crimes, what he's trying to say, and maybe shed some light on things that happened there. Because there were terrible crimes. You know, the victims have not been able to rejoin their family, so I'm not one to play up someone who's committed such horrific crimes. But if we can learn something from him, if we can learn what to look for the next time, if we can learn what we missed when they were investigating him, maybe there can be justice for other victims. All right? If there was evil in this guy's life and he recognized it, maybe we can point it out to other people and they can learn, hey, that's probably not a good thing happening to me in my life. That could be a bad influence, and, you know, run themselves into church and get some help. So that's going to be very interesting because, you know, you all know Bill from the neighborhood. Very, very smart man. And I think you're really going to enjoy his insights into this here on Chasing Justice. So until we meet again, thank you for coming aboard, and we'll see you soon. Hey, now it's funny because the barking we heard before, I think the new rescue is here, and I think it's what kind of dog? I think it's a shepherd, and her name is Ginger, and she's going to be staying with us for a couple of weeks. So hey, remember, if you love animals and you want to get a dog, go get a rescue, right? They're beautiful animals. Save them, rescue them, do that. Be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. And we'll see you next time here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.